Welcome back to another episode of Conduct Detrimental. Today, we are joined by Mike Lawson and Holly Summers. My name is Taryn Sharma. Today, we're going to talk about name, image, and likeness. But before we get into it, Mike, Holly, how's it going?
Going well, Taryn. Thank you for inviting us tonight. We're excited to get this going.
Excited to talk NIL amidst the madness.
Yeah, and it's been madness indeed. It's nice to be able to hop back on. It's been a few weeks. Be able to talk about college sports, something that all three of us are very passionate about. And what better time than in the midst of the NCAA tournament? We just got to Final Four week, and there were some interesting comments this week, Holly, especially somebody that I think we all value his opinion when it comes to sports, particularly basketball and even NCAA basketball, and that's Charles Barkley. This week on 60 Minutes, Barkley was asked what he thinks of the state of college basketball right now, and he said, "It's a travesty and a disgrace."
That was a great impression.
Yeah, that's terrible. he's so mad that we could mess up something so beautiful that we can't pay all these players. In the next 3 to 5 years, we're going to have 25 schools or so that are going to dominate the sports. The schools that can't afford or won't pay the players are going to be irrelevant. Holly, I'm just wondering, from your perspective, Florida Atlantic, one of the 25 schools that Barkley's worried about here?
You know, that is a million-dollar question because it doesn't seem like it's one of the top 25 schools that he is thinking of. But I think Mike has some information that he was talking about kind of their NIL space and how they're involved. So it's kind of interesting that he seems to point to NIL being a problem, but it seems that a lot of different schools are involved in it.
I think this is one of the moments of the greatest parody. And yeah, you mentioned that a comment that Mike had made offline. Mike, what was it that you think that has contributed towards that?
I think NIL has created, I think the transfer portal was a big factor too. Don't get me wrong. I think that's a huge push for spreading talent across the NCAA. But I think NIL kind of leveled the playing field for a lot of these different schools. Now, don't get me wrong. There are a lot of bigger influences with larger schools. So I get what Barkley is saying, but FAU, again, not a normal top 25 kind of university or school when it comes to men's basketball. Right. And they started NIL. They partnered with Open Doors. They have an NIL marketplace for their students to access different partners in the area. And look where they are. Whether that means that they were able to bring in the talent because of NIL or the transfer portal or whatnot, who knows? But it opened the opportunities, and these athletes are accessing these opportunities that NIL has now brought to them that they wouldn't have had before. So I think Barkley is, again, I understand what he's saying, but I just don't see how the top 25 is going to blow everyone out of the water when that's what we have been seeing for the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years anyways. You have your blue blood schools that have been at the top winning all the time.
Yep. Great point, Mike. And I think that top 25 has been relatively consistent over time. If you look back at college basketball in particular, it's not like there are a ton of new entrants into that group. And yet every single year we have madness because it's in a one game tournament, a single elimination tournament, anything can happen. And by the way, I don't think that NIL is the only differentiator when it comes to competition, especially with the way that NCAA basketball chooses its champion, right? The reason that we love watching March Madness is not because, oh, Duke has all of the five stars, so they're going to win every year. This is a hard thing to do, winning six straight games under that immense amount of pressure, right? And so it opens the door for the Lehighs to win, for Princeton to win, for Fairleigh Dickinson, which probably doesn't have a single NIL deal on its roster, to use a different brand of basketball and be well-coached and be able to knock off a top team in Purdue.
Charles Barkley's been wrong about the NIL space before. He's been against NIL from the beginning. I remember back in 2021 when it first kind of came out, he's like, this is going to divide locker rooms. There's going to be some players that have all the money and some players that don't have any of the money. I haven't heard any of that. I haven't heard locker room rifts because one guy's got a big NIL deal. In fact, I'm hearing the exact opposite, where the players are rallying each other and getting them all to do NIL deals. So they're doing group deals. I'm hearing the exact opposite. In fact, it might make it better for the locker room chemistry, because you also had before with full rides, schools could only have a limited amount of full rides on their roster. So you already had a little bit of a divide there before, where some players had a full ride and some players didn't. Then you had your walk-ons and then whatnot. So if you have a whole team deal like that, we saw, you know, in Texas and some Florida teams, but there's an entire team, the whole locker room has an NIL deal. There's no locker room rift. So Barkley was wrong about that. And I think he's wrong about this too.
I agree with you. I think he has been wrong about that. You see a guy like CJ Stroud, where he has a deal with Express and, oh, all my offensive linemen are going to get suits. Like, all my teammates are going to get fitted. Like those things, I think, have the potential to rally. Holly, also, what do you think about just like an innate desire to win that can overcome that sort of thing? People love playing with Caitlin Clark, even though they may not have as big deals as she does, because she makes everybody better, right?
Yeah. I think one of the things that brands look for too, and maybe even boosters look for when they're looking to partner with students, is their leadership ability. And that's not something that you can take away from a locker room because somebody's getting an NIL deal. If they're a leader, they're going to be leading their locker rooms and their teammates as well. And that's something that also creates a large rally and a large like support for each other in the locker rooms. And I think that students seeing other students getting these deals and having the success makes them excited about their future, and even more, I guess, maybe motivated to win and motivated to do better. And then maybe they can also get these big deals as well. It also might be worth mentioning that with March Madness and with the basketball Final Four and everything going on, it's a one and done. And so NIL doesn't mean that you're not going to have an off day. And it doesn't mean that somebody who has a really big deal might not just have an off day, might not have an off game, and might get hurt. So saying that these same top 25 programs are going to be in the March Madness and take over in the next 3 to 5 years is a little interesting to me, because that doesn't make up for all the different probabilities that affect what makes March Madness mad.
Exactly right. Yeah. You could have a situation where a guy like Mark Mitchell isn't able to play 5 minutes before you're playing football against Tennessee in the NCAA basketball tournament.
We're going to talk a little bit. I have a comment about the one and done rule that some people have been making comments about, but you just mentioned one and done in a different context, Holly. But the other thing about NIL is the one and done rule that we see with the NBA has been kind of pulled back, because you have like really good athletes like Armando Bacot, who's choosing to stay at UNC. Because even though he could be very successful, he reminds me a lot of like a Jahlil Okafor. Like he could be a good player like in the NBA with the game that he has. Taryn's shaking his head because he hates UNC.
No, it's not because it's UNC. If he was like a NBA type player, I would agree. But Bacot's game is like built for an NBA that was like two generations ago, not now. Even Okafor, right? Like Okafor's game, because it was so block dominant, is not built for the modern NBA, which relies upon spacing. And it's so important that a big man can get out of the lane. It's the same reason why, you know, Rudy Gobert has trouble every spring in the playoffs. But the other thing that I wanted to say about Barkley and his comments is that he said that teammates are going to have resentment over like, we put in the same work as you. Well, I actually don't think that that's necessarily true. I mean, you might put in the same work, but it, in terms of effort level, but is it the same work in terms of getting your name out there, posting regularly? Like those are the things that develop a follower base that you can leverage into NIL opportunities. It doesn't even necessarily matter whether you're the best player on the team. Obviously that makes it easier, right? But the only NIL guys are not the people that are the best players on the team.
No, I totally agree. I mean, you're seeing a shift now in these locker rooms. I kind of saw it in Syracuse too, where you have, again, it's kind of doubles with the transfer portal, right? I mean, you have a lot of young kind of talented people who have also, because it's also kind of paired with COVID. COVID also barrels into this too, because a lot of these kids had an extra year of eligibility besides a redshirt season, right? So they're at school for 6 years. And now they have the opportunity to make NIL deals where they want to stay. They want to be in that position where they're like, hey, I can make some money here, who might not be an NBA talent. And like, I'll say it, you know, Joe Girard, like for Syracuse, I don't know if he's an NBA talent. He entered into the transfer portal and he put his eligibility into the draft process. But I think he's got a better opportunity to make a lot more money in the NIL space in college than he would potentially being a corner specialist in the NBA. I don't know.
And my disagreement with you about Bacot is not rooted in the original point that you were making, in that I do think that more people have been coming back because you can make more staying at Carolina for an extra year instead of playing for the Shanghai Sharks. And that's what he had to look forward to if he left Chapel Hill.
Right. Their opportunities are better for them, better suited within the NCAA instead of moving on. I agree. And that's a good thing. I don't think that's a bad thing.
I think it's a great thing. Honestly, the thing that made me fall in love with college basketball was continuity. Year after year, you had the same guys and you got to watch them grow from, you know, a freshman. I one of my favorite players, Chris Duhon, came in as a freshman. He was on the national championship team in 2001. And then by the time he was a senior, he had led that group of a new student athletes into the Final Four again. And I just really enjoyed watching that progression. And I think that's been lost a little bit. So if it takes Memphis trotting out like a guy that's older than Joe Burrow out there on the court against Florida Atlantic, like I'm willing to live with that, as silly as it may seem. Holly, do you have anything else on this?
Yeah, I think that his statements regarding like, we do as much work as you, also kind of self-negates itself, because a lot of students who also have NIL deals, like you said, aren't necessarily the best or don't necessarily put more work into it as everybody else. There's students like the coldest Crawford who partnered with an NIL deal with the HVAC company because of his last name, or like Bijan Robinson from Texas has his Dijon mustard company, I'm pretty sure. And it's just solely based on them going out and realizing, I have this name, it's fun, and or companies realizing, hey, that's a great way for us to partner with you, like we'll make this connection. And it doesn't have necessarily, even though these are like really good players, it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with their skill. It's just their position, as well as like some other factor that is super interesting about them that will help the brands advertise a little.
Yeah. And I think you could put Livy Dunn in that category too. It's not like she's the best gymnast, but she's a gymnast at a good program, and she's very active and regular about posting on social media. I think that really is what makes the difference. We're going to talk more about Chuck's other comments later, maybe some that we agree with a little bit more, but I wanted to get to this point about name, image, and likeness and hurting the ability to win. The thing there about Barkley worrying about locker room chemistry, that was almost an issue at Miami this past offseason, right? Nigel Pack decides that he's going to commit to Miami, leave Kansas State, and immediately a two-year, $800,000 deal with Life Wallet, of course, John Ruiz's company, is announced. And then shortly thereafter, Isaiah Wong, who ended up then becoming ACC Player of the Year this year, said that he was going to leave if his contract with Life Wallet was not renegotiated. Ruiz said that he doesn't renegotiate contracts, but ultimately, I guess that everything got sorted out behind closed doors because Wong did play on the team and he, along with the rest of the club, reached the Final Four for the first time in Miami's history. I wanted to ask you, Holly, about your thoughts and maybe what Coach Larrañaga's influence is here. He made the comments this week, TV makes money, right? The shoe companies make money. The universities make money. The athletic directors, they benefit from their relationship with the shoe companies, and the coaches make a hell of a living. Well, what's wrong with that filtering down? To me, that's big time athletics. I think that the NCAA tournament is the best sporting event in the world, and these guys should be rewarded for the great job that they do, not only playing the game, but representing their universities. Do you think that that type of attitude, Holly, is something that has helped keep that locker room together, even though there was that initial rift when Pack committed?
I think for sure. I think that a coach saying things like that and encouraging his athletes in that way really creates a sense of camaraderie amongst the locker room and amongst the teammates, and really helps them realize, hey, if coach is on our side and he wants this for us, then I'm going to be on my teammate's side when they get these deals, and I want this for them too. And I think that he also kind of, he did mention that he hasn't noticed any jealousy or any rift in the locker rooms this past season. And he thinks that everything's been really coherent and they've really worked together and they rallied behind each other. I really do believe that he had a big impact on that, even though maybe he hasn't acknowledged it himself.
Yeah. And I think that the proof is in the pudding there, especially you talk about that chemistry, right? They were down by 9 points to Drake with like a minute and change to go, came back, won that game, finished on like a 16-1 run. And then in the second half against Texas, coming back from that major deficit, 13 points or something like that.
If you want to talk about NIL and pairing it with successful programs and winning, I mean, look no further than Miami. I think both men's and women's teams have had successful runs. The men's team is still going. The women's team unfortunately lost, but you know, we talked about the Cavender twins and their transfer from Fresno State. We've talked about that a lot on this.
Yeah. As a seven seed, they made it to the Sweet 16. I think that's the furthest that Miami women's basketball has ever made it.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And the John Ruiz Cavender twins, the penalties that Miami was, you know, facing, you know, all of that, put that aside, the team still was successful and they won. So you pair the NIL deal with the transfer portal and you have this successful program. And Miami was they've been a decent basketball program, but the ACC is always strong. So, you know, yeah. Again, you're talking about blue bloods, right? You pretty much have had Duke and UNC at the top of the ACC forever. And then UVA started to become a little bit more of a powerhouse in the last, you know, couple of years. But this year, ACC was all over the place. I mean, you had Clemson at the top in the beginning of the year. Then Miami, Florida State had a good run at the end of the year. Syracuse was absolutely abysmal. They were terrible. Couldn't even get an NIT bid. But you have a lot of talent now. This Pitt had a really good, they had a great, you know, run too in the tournament. So I picked that upset. They were an 11 seed, right? And I think you've got this kind of spreading out of talent across ACC, which is great. I love it. I love seeing it. But Miami is still going strong. And Taryn, like you just said, 7 seed making it as far as they did. And Miami's a 5 seed in the Final Four. And this year, the Final Four is all over the place. You have a 9-5, a 5-4. So it's definitely interesting to see that. Coach L has been great. You know, he is backing his team. You know, he's backing his players and he's supporting them. And I remember seeing that where Wong, who's, again, ACC player of the year, unbelievable player. Was it the game against Miami? Was it against Indiana where he went off? He had like, I think like 30 something points. He had a really, really great performance. I think he thought that his deal, he wanted more money out of it when Ruiz started shelling out big bucks when Pat came in. So again, I don't see maybe necessarily a rift between the players, but now we have this like negotiating power of, hey, like I'm a good player. I think I want more money than this. Right. And we see that in the pro league all the time, obviously. So it's super, super interesting to see that.
Neither Pac or Wong is probably the best player on Miami, right? It's Miller. Jordan Miller is probably. So I wanted to ask you, Mike, you know, we hear all the time, it's copycat league, probably say that about football more than anything, but I think it applies here too. Everyone's trying to figure out, you know, this really difficult thing to do, winning 6 games in March to be national champions. What are the different ways that we can do it? Well, this is a way that is applicable, right? More schools could find themselves dipping into the transfer portal, trying to get their boosters connected with student athletes, whether that's done in an above board way or otherwise, right?
Yeah, I think what's interesting about the NIL and what we talked about before about the marketplace is a big deal, right? You've got this difference between big top 25 powerhouse schools who have always been very, very good. Like we keep saying, the blue bloods, right? Your Kansas, your Kentucky, your UNC, your Duke. But now we have major markets that are playing a big deal, right? Like Jersey, in reality, we talked about Fairleigh Dickinson, but Jersey's not far from Philly and New York. There could be a significant amount of boosters in that area if they have the right outreach. You know, we saw St. Peter's last year had a beautiful run, right? But that was, you know, now we have NIL. Could they make the run with some NIL players? But then you have like fair weather places, right? You have Miami. Everybody wants to go to school in Miami. That's a very beautiful spot to go to school.
Fair weather in terms of climate.
Climate. Yeah. You're right. Like if you go to, you know, California for school or Arizona, right? Like places that are like, quote unquote, like a good destination in terms of the climate and, you know, this place of the university. So it's definitely, I think, good for accessibility of the market. And you have to, it's kind of switching up this, like, I want to go to Duke because Duke wins every single year. And it's like, well, I want to go to Miami because there's a lot of money there and it's a nice school and nice weather. So it's kind of a different analysis than before.
Yeah, I think that there's still an emphasis, right, on having the right pieces in play. Miami has a great coach, somebody that's really well regarded for being a great coach. He's had them competitive. He took George Mason to the Final Four. That, I think, gets lost because we've seen other Cinderella runs, but George Mason is like a small commuter school. They had no
11 seed
run. Yeah, and they beat like all of the top seeds. UConn was probably the best team that year, and ironically, Larry Nagel will have to take them down to get to the national championship.
Yeah, and Mike, something that you just said reminded me, talking about these different deals that maybe affect the transfer portal or where students want to go based on deals maybe other students are getting. One of the things that Coach L said recently was it's only fair since our school is so publicized with the NIL deals that maybe every school has to publicize the deals that their athletes are making. And they kind of, he compared it to the NBA salaries being public and posted on in the internet. And I thought that was a little interesting because he mentioned how public Miami's deals are. And to me, I was thinking, I immediately thought like John Ruiz, because he, I feel like, is always tweeting about the deals that he makes. And for sure. I don't see any other supporter, any other boosters making these tweets as much as he is and as involved as he is. So I was wondering if you guys had any kind of thoughts on maybe if that's why their deals are so publicized and how you feel about other schools having to publicize their deals.
Well, you got to thread the needle there because Ruiz might have gotten Miami into trouble because of all the...
Not a booster. He's not a booster.
Not a booster. But I think transparency is definitely a necessity, especially in the context of some schools who only might have one booster or donor, whatever you want to call them. So transparency is always big, but that's how we lead to the enforcement of what we saw with the NCAA's investigation as it pertained to NIL and inducements and things like that. So I think that because it's been such a gray area, being transparent really didn't mean anything because there was no, you know, punishment either way. So now if there's actually an established kind of committee that brings on some sort of investigation or they know the rules, right? We need rules first, right? And we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but like, because there still technically is like no law, right? There's no rules.
It's guidelines.
It's guidelines and it's still a gray area. So I think transparency is a big deal, but at the same time, you got to thread that needle and toe the line because you also could get yourself in trouble if there is some sort of inducements involved.
I don't mind transparency, but I think I want to push back on the exact like one-to-one comparison there. Yeah, NBA salaries are disclosed, but not every endorsement deal is disclosed. And that's what this is supposed to be, right? It's them taking advantage of their right to celebrity more than anything. So I'm not sure if I love that one-to-one comparison, but I would like to see as much honesty as possible in the industry, because I think that then that protects the student athletes also to know who they're getting into business with. I thought that, you know, Larinaga's comments were poignant. There's a lot of coaches that kind of get it, right? And I think Mick Cronin at UCLA is another one of those, another Final Four coach. He said this week, he was asked what kind of comments he had on Charlie Baker taking over. And Ollie, we talked about Charlie Baker on our last episode, but Cronin said, the dying words of every successful business is somebody sitting there saying, well, this is how we've always done things. And I would remind that to the new head of the NCAA. And so my thought is there that even though the coaches may not be consulted on every stance of the NCAA, I like that they are making clear how they think about it. And I think that that's not only good for the student athletes, but just good for the game for people to be on more of the same page.
Yeah, I agree completely. It kind of goes back to what we were saying about Coach L really supporting his athletes. And I think that's exactly what Mick Cronin is doing here, is saying, I am supporting this and I am supporting my athletes and my kids getting these deals and getting this money. And I'm adapting and our school has adapted and everybody else who doesn't have this regulatory control has adapted. And I think the NCAA needs to adapt as well.
Did this comment come right in the, was this the presser after they lost?
Yeah, that's
what I thought. I mean, in that context too, right? Like, of course he's going to back his players, right? In that context, I think, you know, he's not going to say anything ill-advised at that moment, especially being upset that his, you know, his team was just knocked out of, what was that?
Sweet 16. They played really hard, though. That was a great game.
That was an unbelievable game, and I wanted UCLA to win, and I'm glad Gonzaga ultimately did lose. But I think there's also this level of kind of growing that coaches are doing, right? You're like, you're seeing the old guard. Well, I mean, a lot of those guys are out now with Boeheim moving on, but
yeah.
It's really them trying to conceptualize like what NCAA will look like because they've been in the NCAA for so long. You know, some of these coaches have been here 20, 30, 40, bam, was almost 50 years. So, you know, they know how the game operates and they just can't compute like what the next like stage of the NCAA is. So like, I get there's just like, it's a growing period and there's going to be some growing pains, but at the same time, there's also this huge fast track of maturity that their players are also going through, right? Because college players don't get the actual like payment sphere until they like hit pro, right? Like they get that first paycheck and they're like, I am loaded now. I can do whatever I want. They're getting that sooner rather than later. And I think it's a good opportunity for them for this growing period for them in terms of like maturity as like adults. And like now they have money and they're all business savvy, right? Like the way that they can use and craft social media. So yeah, I think Cronin in that situation, of course, is going to support his team and his players. But a lot of these coaches are transitioning to that because they can't not, because the game will move on without them, because the NCAA is already going towards that.
And I think it's happening even before they get to college, right? Like there's a guy, Jared McCain, who's a big TikTok guy. He's going to come play basketball at Duke this fall. And On3 has his NIL valuation at like 1.2 mil. That's like a, you know, first entry league contract in a lot of places. So yeah, I agree with your point. And I think it's well taken. Last thing that we'll talk about tonight, and I think we can frame this again in some of Charles Barkley's comments from this month. He was on the March Madness halftime show or postgame show reacting to a video of Charlie Baker's comments saying that Baker was going to lobby Congress. And I think that, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but the three of us have kind of like seen this coming. There's a reason why you put the former governor of Massachusetts in charge. It's because you're going to keep trying that process of lobbying. And so Barkley said, you know, did he just say, Baker, that we're going to ask the politicians to help us? See, that pisses me off already. Our politicians are awful people. I would actually go to people who care about basketball. And I think that people get caught up in that first part of it, but it's actually the last part of it that I found more interesting, going to people that actually care about basketball. I think that level of communication has been sorely lacking for a long time. Don't you, Holly?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that it's kind of been evident as we've been talking even today about all these coaches coming out and saying how they feel, what they think, how they've been preparing or how they've adapted. There seems that there hasn't been a lot of communication between maybe the NCAA and the schools or students or coaches. I did see a couple things, I guess, when Charlie Baker first got, I guess, inaugurated, if you will, he said that he had talked to a couple students who said that they like the NIL, but they want there to be some sort of congressional hearing on it where they get clear regulations, and they don't want to be employees of their schools. They like staying their amateur status. So it's a little interesting. The things that he reports on that these students are saying just happen to be exactly maybe what he is doing.
Yeah, it's going through a filter.
Yeah. Instead of, and then we see these press releases or these students who are talking, who are saying, here's what the NCAA needs to do. Here's what we want. They need to heed these words. The NCAA is going to disappear, things like that. And we never really see any discourse about that.
So tomorrow, today is Tuesday, March 28th. I believe tomorrow is the first NIL hearing in Congress. So Charlie Baker has, you know, successfully got Congress to hold a hearing. I just want to look at, they have the list of who is going to be speaking at the hearing. So Jennifer Heppel, the Patriot League commissioner, Makola Abdullah, Virginia State president, Trey Burton, former Florida and NFL tight end, Kaylee Mudge, Florida State softball player, Pat Chun, Washington State athletic director, and Jason Stahl, executive director of the Collegiate Football Players Association. So they have a good lineup of people who know college sports, right? Like that's what Barkley wants, like people who know basketball. And I think he was implying like sports. So he wanted a committee. He like later on, well, what's funny too, I think later on in that comment too, I think he was like, they're all crooks or something like that, all the politicians. But he said like, let's create a committee of people who are within the sport, involved in the sport. And that's what they're going to do. That's what Congress usually does, right? They have a hearing that they have, you know, questions aligned to people who are more expert in that realm, whether or not they come up with something that's good. I mean, they've been circulating NIL bills since July of 2021 and they've gotten nowhere. So do I disagree with the sentiment that Barkley is saying? No, because I agree. Like, I think he's trying to say like it gets nowhere when you kind of like leave it up to the politicians. But if they do it the right way, if they maintain the committees that have people with expertise in the field, it's going to move forward. And I think ultimately what they should do is bring in people in NIL spheres, you know, like bring in people, whether it's NIL companies or players who have NIL deals, like how that works, what they're doing. So there's a whole slew of things that need to be done, I think, for this to be impactful. And I think what Barkley was trying to get at by saying that is what the I think that's what Congress is actually doing. So, yes, everyone's kind of like jumping at Barkley because he was like, our politicians are terrible people. They're all crooks. Like they can all go to hell, but they're doing the right thing, I think. And in terms of transparency, like if there's an actual rule in place, then more transparency can be actually applicable.
I don't think that people who care about basketball, this group that Barkley brings up, is a monolith. And I think that a couple of the people that we would include in that group are athletic directors and college presidents at major schools. And this week, Notre Dame's athletic director, Jack Swarbrick, and President John Jenkins released an op-ed in the New York Times. And I think it's taken a lot of heat, but there are actually some things in here that I agreed to. We're really grateful to Ross Dellinger from Sports Illustrated. I think every episode we talk about something that Ross Dellinger has written. And for me, he's a white whale in terms of somebody that I would love to get on this show to be able to discuss these issues with us. But Swarbrick and Jenkins, they were basically laying out a plan for limited federal legislation. They want a rule that college athletes are not employees. As listeners to this show know, there's currently the Johnson case, as well as multiple NLRB cases that are pending, which could result in the declaration that college athletes are employees. Of course, there was the memo from general counsel of the NLRB, Jennifer Abruzzo, last year that stated that she believes that college athletes are employees. They also wanted that legislation to preempt the differing state name, image, and likeness laws. They wanted to allow college athletics the freedom to create their own NIL rules with an eye towards competitive equity. The other interesting ones I thought in here, the NFL should create a minor league and the NBA should eliminate the one and done rule, and that athletes should be required to report all NIL transactions to the school. There are a couple of things that they wanted the NCAA to look at, including establishing a class miss policy, limiting team travel schedules. I think that one, and honestly, I agree with all three of these. I think that they're pretty legit suggestions in that I've always thought that it was very funny that students have to like travel on a Thursday and then, you know, they're on the road for midweek games. I think that if you're going to call them student athletes, there probably should be a focus on students there and not living up to TV contracts. Creating a national medical trust fund for those injured while playing college sports. I think that's something that student athlete advocates have been talking about for a long time, that you're basically on your own. And then this last one, and then I want to hear both of your thoughts just generally on the entire thing, honoring scholarships for athletes who wish to return to school to complete their degrees. I know of a former student athlete at Stanford. He left and went to the NBA, decided to retire now, and he wants to go back to Stanford, and they're not honoring the promise that they made at the time under the previous coaching staff that he could come back and get his degree. So that was a lot. Mike, I'd love to hear your thoughts on any, all of that. Was there anything that you agreed with, disagreed with in this this op-ed?
So it's interesting. So the name, the title of the op-ed, I believe it's "College Sports Are a Treasure. Don't Turn Them into the Minor Leagues," basically something like that. We just talked about the old guard. A lot of this, when I was like looking through this, is it's like very old school, kind of this archaic NCAA, let's preserve amateurism, kind of the language was similar to that. Some of the things that you were proposing, like, you know, the medical fund for players who get injured, I think that's really impressive. But these are all like good ideas that aren't really related to NIL. I mean, like, those are like just good things that need to be proposed. And guess what? Notre Dame, those are the two most influential individuals in that university, the athletic director and the president. They can impose that on their own university. They're an independent university. They can do that themselves. So yeah, they're like essentially saying like, hey, NCAA, you figure it out for us. Here's some of our ideas, but you do it. Like, or Congress even, because everybody's just been pushing it off onto the NCAA. But like, they could impose this themselves. Now, in terms of the NFL forcing, you know, not forcing, imposing the NFL to create a minor league system. Yeah, that's that's a little ridiculous.
It's not gonna happen.
I mean, if you want to kind of say like the XFL, like they could go to the XFL, right? Then there's the aspect of the one and done rule, which we just talked about before, but like NIL kind of, I don't know. Like, I think like a player is more hesitant, like unless they're like a really elite athlete coming in, like as a freshman, one and done is a rare thing. Right. And people now can also dip their toe into the NBA draft without revoking their NCAA eligibility, just to see like just to see if they could be drafted, but they're retaining the eligibility so they can play.
Getting that feedback. Yeah.
Yeah. And NIL gives them that protection where they're like, well, I could still make money here. So
it raises the floor from zero to whatever their endorsement potential is.
Yeah. Yeah. And this kind of like fear that they were kind of talking about, like they're afraid like the NCAA is going to implode if they don't do something like right now. I mean, we've had 2 years of lawlessness now in this NIL era, the Wild Wild West, as we like to say. And we haven't imploded yet, but I mean, I have said on this podcast multiple times that I think that the NCAA is doomed already. I think there's a model out there that's going to be a lot more beneficial, that's like conference run instead of like a super like NCAA umbrella run, but that's neither here nor there. But it's interesting that they took to the New York Times to create this op-ed too. I mean, I think that's another reason why they're getting a lot of heat for it, because of the old style of this is how it's always been and we need to preserve this and things like that. But they're also suggesting, I think, good things that are completely unrelated to the NIL. So it's kind of a mixed bag.
Holly, how do you think that this aligns with Cronin's comments, like the dying gasp and this is the way that we've always done things? They're basically advocating for collegiate athletics, which made zero movement on allowing players to take advantage of endorsements forever, to create the rules. Do you see that being the same?
They're like same, but different. I feel like Cronin is saying the NCAA will disappear if it doesn't adapt, and maybe kind of even hinting at like that could potentially be a good thing in the future if student athletes get to be considered employees of their universities. And here it seems like Jenkins and Swarbrick are saying, we need you to do something as soon as possible so you don't disappear, because we don't want the NCAA to disappear. It's going to break apart without these resolutions, and here's what you can do as soon as possible to fix it. So instead of being like a heed my words, change is coming, it seems like these comments are more like get ahead of it and make these resolutions now, and maybe you can kind of always be a little bit ahead of the game, a little step forward. But something that Mike said kind of made me laugh is the world is still on its axis. We're still spinning in this NIL like lawlessness. And something that they are kind of hinting at is this protection of students. Everything that they are saying seems to be revolving around protecting their student athletes, whether it's not missing as much class or having a way to get funds that are needed if they get injured, and even coming back to school if they want to. It's all about protecting their students, while they also throw in things that are like, Congress should make us a unified rule or unified regulations. And it's like Mike said, you can go ahead and do that. You can do all these things to protect your students without the NCAA making you and making everybody else. And then also without Congress having to do that as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having a little bit more clarity, but I think that the issues that are present with NIL are due to like a lack of fundamental leadership at the top, and not necessarily because of anything that the student athletes have been doing. I think they're making the most of what the situation has been and the guidelines that we have. Would you agree with that, Mike?
Yeah, they're trying to. they're trying to stay within the gray area without being, you know, investigated or, you know, having some sort of NCAA violation, which we're seeing the NCAA also diving into now too. I think that also was a reason that Charlie Baker, you know, was influential in, because he wanted to kind of put his foot down so they can impose some sort of stronger, firm guideline. But I think that it's like this like perfect chaos almost, that like we've kind of navigated a way where the NIL just works in the current context. But I do think that there has to be some sort of guardrail or guidelines, or else there is potential for derailing.
Yeah, I think that the biggest issue is that people say that something that isn't allowed is NIL, and it like besmirches the name of NIL. You know, there are things that are allowed that have been allowed now since the interim policy. And there are things that were never allowed that still aren't allowed that people are trying to skate by with based on the interim policy, and the NCAA just hasn't policed it. And so then you have people who, you know, I read the New York Times sometimes, but their regular readership are seeing this and they're like, oh my gosh, these under the table payments are over the table. They're going around like hotcakes. It's like, that's not what the majority of NIL is. There are a few bad actors that would like to do it that way, but that's not what this is. It's not what it's supposed to be anyway. And if it's happened that way, I think it's due to failures of leadership. One thing that you said, Mike, that I thought was interesting, you think the NCAA is doomed and will end up with some sort of conference-based model. The conferences have a lot of power right now. The Power Five conference commissioners are some of the most powerful people in sports. If they wanted to have a legitimate policy and not just this interim policy, the guidelines, if they wanted to have rules, couldn't they work on that and put something forward now?
Yeah, they very well could. I think they're all still taking a step back and waiting for the NCAA to do something. I think they're still doing this hands-off approach because nobody wants to be the first one to do it, especially if it blows up in their face. They'd rather have the NCAA, it blow up in the NCAA's face than them. I think when you talk about power of the conferences, you talk about conference realignment and things like that. Like, there's a lot of power within the conferences, and just in terms of, like I said, realignment. So they will do what they want if they need to. But at this moment, I think they're hesitant to step into that because they're afraid of anything blowing up in their face.
Yeah, I would love to ask both of you a question kind of in that same vein. One of the things that was written in the co-ed was They want to have a preemption of differing state NIL laws and allow college athletics to create NIL rules for the sake of competitive equity. What does that look like for each of you? Because that statement confused me a little bit, thinking of there's no differing state NIL laws. Instead, we just have a potential for a ton more different NIL rules when it comes to each individual school. So I'd love to know each of your thoughts kind of about that and what that might look like and how that affects this competitive equity.
I didn't take it that way. I took it more like they want a single uniform policy and they want it to come at the federal level so that they don't have to worry about each state adopting it. But you go back and remember that until California and then really until Florida passed their NIL law, we would have seen zero movement on this. So this was never going to happen until the state of Florida pushed their hand, forced the NCAA's hand. So again, to me, the idea of like jumping back and allowing the same powers that be that have been in power for all of this time and been entrenched in college sports to this point, who saw no need to make movement until it was forced upon them, I don't want those people to be the ones that come up with the rules. I don't know. Like, do you think that that's the wrong way of looking at it, Mike?
To answer Holly's question first, and then I'll answer you, Taryn. I think there's the preemption was important because there was this fear when all of the states started individually passing their own bills and then some revoking their bills. They were worried that it was going to create an inequity because players are going to just jump ship, especially with the transfer portal, because, hey, I have a better opportunity here and here and here. I think that's kind of fizzled out now because there are a significant number of states that do allow NIL. I think the difference now is some maybe high school level because some allow high school and some don't. So there could be some inequity still with that. But the federal bill would preempt all of that and there would just be an overarching rule. So I think that's necessary for a lot of different reasons. It's also the same reason that we have preemption, federal preemption currently, but at the same time, every state has different laws too. So the difference is always a good thing. Like, you know, if a player wants to go to a different state because they have a better NIL deal possible, then that's their right. And I don't think nothing is really going to change that. I think in the minutia of like the bill, but Taryn, in terms of what you're saying, again, I think it's this growing process, these growing pains that we're seeing within the old guard, within the players, or within the administration that's been there for a very, very long time. I think it's nice that Charlie Baker's there with a fresh perspective. I hope at least he's there with a fresh perspective. They're going back to Congress, which they did in the beginning too. They've come full circle now. But then again, Mark Emmert did nothing at all. So I don't know.
He tried, but people didn't like him. So he wasn't able to move the needle at all.
I think there's a way where the people who are in there, I mean, yeah, the Jack Swarbricks are not going to be creating any sort of policy because they're just going to, they're going to impose their will on the professional leagues, I guess. Like he's telling the NFL what to do. I think there's a way that it can all kind of blend together, but they have to do it the right way. You need athlete representation. You need committees that are formed. You crowdsource this, source this. Don't just like create a bill, create a law and just be like, this is it. Like, they need, as long as we've been going through this madness of since 2021, right? We're coming up on 2 years in July. There hasn't been any sort of progress in the context of like, how is this going? Like there needs to be, NCAA loves doing these committees, these player committees. And I remember when I was at Syracuse, the amount of like NCAA committees I had to sit in on, like there was a million of them. That's how I found out about NIL. It was back in 2019. The NCAA was having committees about it. Go do that again. But in that context, those committees were like, okay, like don't panic, but like players might get paid and like soon. So like, just want to let you know, like this is going to be changing. So like, but I'm like sitting there, I'm like, what? I was like, I didn't even know what they were talking about. So like do that again. But in the context of like, how do we make this better? How does this match for each university, each player, each compliance department? Geez, compliance has been probably, I would hate to be in a compliance office at this moment.
They're right swamped. Now. Yeah.
Because you have the Johnson court case where you have players potentially being paid as employees. You've got the antitrust exemption that they're trying to impose on like on Congress. You've got NIL that's going buck wild. You've got everything going a million different which ways. And like Syracuse is a big university and like their compliance department, I'm guessing, is probably having to work with like general counsel's office because of potential legal contracts. If they're working with boosters, making sure that there's no inducement. I mean, good Lord, I can only imagine what it's like to be a compliance officer right now, because all the overhead that's happening is just being funneled into that office.
Yeah. It sounds like a nightmare. I thought the op-ed was just fascinating because it was simultaneously like stuck in the past and then had the self-awareness. You know, there's that quote in there. They say the NCAA spent so much time and wasted so much energy and money defending amateurism, which is a ridiculous proposition. Somebody has to explain to me someday why amateurism is a positive characteristic. No one ever said that the babysitter's experience would be a lot better if we didn't pay him or her, which, you know, that is like, yeah, you're getting it. And then you say the stuff like, oh, I'd like the NCAA, like, let's peel everything back and let's give the NCAA kind of like a redo to be able to come up with policy. And it's like, you really had your shot with this. So I'm not sure why they should get another run at it. And I'm not sure why you would shut down the states, which are like these laboratories of innovation for the whole thing.
They just move faster than the federal government.
So with that, I think we can wrap this episode. It was a pleasure to be able to get back on and be able to talk to both of you. As always, we want to thank our presenting sponsor, Themis Bar Review, with our code GoodSport500. You can get $500 off. Mike, you're a Themis guy. I'm a Themis guy. Holly, Themis gal. It is, when we say the best bar review prep in the galaxy, we really mean it. And so we really love and appreciate our longtime sponsor, Themis Bar Review. Go check them out. GoodSport500 is our code. You can find me online. I'm at TK Sharma Law on Twitter, as long as that exists. Holly?
I am at Prosecuty Rests on Twitter as well.
Mike?
I'm Mike_SonOf_Law.
And much like his Android, Mike is stuck in his ways. He will not change the multiple underscored username on Twitter. As always, you can find all of our work at Conduct Detrimental, at Con Detrimental on Twitter, and on the blog conductdetrimental.com. Thanks again, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next time on another episode of Conduct Detrimental.